Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall. And today on the show, we're talking all about books. In particular, for those of you who might have made a reading resolution for 2023, we want to get you kicked off in fine fashion. So we're going to talk about that today. And we have Barry McKnight from the La Crosse Public Library and Beth Hartung from Pearl Street Books in La Crosse, both with us to talk about what they're reading and what they might recommend if you yourself are looking for a book in 2023. And of course, there'll be plenty of time for us to find out what's going on at the library and what's going on at Pearl Street Books. First of all, Barry, happy 2023 to you.
No, thank you. Happy 2023. And yeah, thanks for having us.
And Beth, welcome to Newsmakers and thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Ezra. Thanks for having me. I'm so pleased to be here talking with you about books.
Yeah, it's exciting. So let's jump right in. A lot of people have resolved to read more in 2023. They might have done the trendy thing of either I'm going to do a book a week or, you know, a book a month if you're a slow reader like me or whatever, but they've set some kind of goal and it's still a new goal because as we're taping this, it's like the third week of January. So we're still in good shape as far as our goals go. But I'm interested in finding out, like, from your perspective, start with you, Beth, what makes a good book?
Oh, that's a great question. For me, a good book is the opportunity to gain an experience that I wouldn't gain otherwise. So it's that window and mirror, it's that opportunity to go someplace else, meet somebody new, experience something that, you know, is going to teach me or make me think a little bit differently or just change me in some way and touch my heart. So that's what makes a good book.
Oh. What about you, Barry?
Well, that was a great answer. That's right? Maybe the best answer. But I the only thing I would add to it would be, certainly for myself and other folks, we're often so kind of fatigued and the news can often be fairly bleak or uninspiring. And, you know, there's something about, at least for myself, I love to kind of escape and to experience something different, to, just sort of exercise my mind and my imagination.
Yeah. I was wondering which direction to take this conversation. If in fact I was going to recommend a book to somebody, how do you determine whether to lean more into the escapism that's available through literature or more into either like education or social action or some other kind of thing? So let's talk about when you're talking with somebody either at the library or in your store, Beth, what makes, how do you help that person determine what might be the right avenue? What might be the right avenue for their interests? Barry, you want to start with this one?
Sure. I'd say, for example, I read a lot of sci-fi and fantasy, and I have a particular soft spot, as Beth knows, because I certainly do some shopping at her bookstore. But I have a soft spot for like some of those old vintage sci-fi from the 60s and 70s, you know, these small paperbacks that I remember from a kid visiting a bookstore and a spinner rack with all those titles. But, you know, one of the great things for really all genre fictions today is there's so many new voices and new perspectives, and it can be the genre you loved, but you can really start to hear some different voices. So I kind of try to suss out folks if are they looking for a new experience? Are they looking for just the old comfort, or do they want something that maybe just would push their tastes or experience a little bit?
Beth, how do you help people who might not be looking for a specific thing, but they're just, I want to read something else and I don't know where to go?
I think it's what, as Barry said, or as you introduced the concept of it, is to find out what kind of experience they want. Are they looking to escape, just a fun escape where they don't have to think much, just, you know, be away from reality for a little while and have fun? Or do they want to learn something? Do they want to learn something new? Do they want to learn something more about something? It's really about trying to identify what that reader wants from this book in front of them.
So is there a kind of book that Maybe you can see them coming a mile away. Somebody's looking in, walking in with their New Year's resolution, Beth, and you know they're going to be looking for a book. Is there a kind of book they're more likely to be looking for this time of the year?
I think there's a lot of people are looking for personal growth books right now, wanting to grow themselves, clean out their house, make it more organized, have a better, healthier diet, start planting their garden. Things like that are really hot right now. There's also a lot of people that want to read BIPOC authors. And so helping them identify which author they want to read, which new and coming, or somebody who's maybe more classical.
Right.
We're selling a lot of books like that as well.
Yeah, I'd say it's kind of the same case. And, you know, certainly for myself, I'm one of those can't be satisfied with just one book. So I usually have like kind of four I'm working on, and, you know, some I'll make faster progress with than others. But I like to balance it out. So nonfiction versus fiction. People coming in, you know, like Beth said, this time of year, it's all about personal growth. So it's going to be, they got to get organized. They want to lose that last 10 pounds, or they want to work on maybe wellness or something like that. That's really maybe this time of year, every year, that's always the big thing. The post-resolution work people want to do, right?
Yeah, people thought they thought their resolution was a good idea, and now they're like, oh no, I need help.
It's like homework.
In a lot of ways, for people who don't have like regular counselors or whatever, you might be like their first cry for help.
Well,
we call ourselves book tenders at Pearl Street Books.
Yeah.
Book tenders. Oh, I like that.
Book tenders.
You each have different approaches to freshening up the inventory or whatever. I mean, I know you can't just keep a library book there forever if nobody's using it. And Beth, I know the goal is to get things to march off the shelves in your store as well. So how do you decide what to go find, what to keep, find another life for?
Kind of for libraries, it's kind of a multi-stage process. So yeah, you're right. We don't necessarily keep things forever. There's an idea of having kind of a core collection, or keeping certain things kind of just in case. But we do look quite a bit at, you know, usage. And if something hasn't been checked out in, you know, 5+ years, why not? You know, is there a newer version of that, or newer alternative that's more popular? So we do, that's a process in libraries called weeding. So you kind of, you know, pull out that, and the idea is just like, you know, with anything else, you're kind of cleaning out the weeds so that the sunlight can come down on the rest of it. And then we're trying to replace with relevant current titles. You know, another factor of it too is things change, the national or cultural conversations change, the language changes. So maybe what had been a great book about a certain subject might now have problematic language, or just its take on something might not quite be what people are looking for right then. So we do also look at, you know, is there a better version of things? We continually kind of look at the collection and try to have it evolve and reflect demand in the community.
Is that where it primarily comes from? Is like, I mean, if a lot of people are interested in a title or a subject, you'll find books on it. I mean, I know libraries are huge, like free speech advocates, and yet you can't literally keep everything.
It's always tough. I mean, no, actually, it's sort of a running joke in the field about, you know, I think everybody went into libraries, they want to hold on to every book, but you just can't, you know. Yeah. Even if you have a larger library like La Crosse Public Library, there's just only so much space. And so it's always that kind of, yeah, it is that tough balance. You know, I've had to weed things that, oh, I look at it and say, oh, I wish I could have kept it, but nobody's touched it in, you know, 7 years. And it's not, you know, maybe it's going to do somebody some good when it, you know, goes to a used bookstore or to one of the friends of the library, have a book sale or something like that.
I'm going to put you on the spot. Like, is there an example you can think of that was like particularly painful?
Gosh. I'd say that, you know, when I used to, this isn't my original career. So I used to be in higher ed and I used to teach history. So that's a great example of like, there's a number of works that, you know, maybe aren't, don't need to kind of take up quite as much oxygen, so to speak, if you're trying to give, you know, clear room for kind of different voices, especially of people of color and things like that. So, yeah, I'd say, you know, I just weeded one. It was about like mountain men. I can't remember the title, but I was like, and it was an old book. I mean, it had probably been here like 20 years and it had certainly been checked out in like, you know, 8 or 9. I was like, oh, it's probably the only book like this around, but no, it went.
Gotta go. What about you, Beth? Is there, you talked earlier about almost putting that book in the free box and thankfully somebody wanted it and showed an interest in it. Has there been a book that you have put in the free box that you just thought, oh, it's too bad. It's too bad. Nobody wants this one yet.
Yeah. I mean, we just right now in our free box, we have a bunch of Dick Francis mysteries, and he's a good writer. I like his mysteries a lot. I enjoyed them a lot in my 20s and 30s, but I haven't sold a Dick Francis novel since I've owned the store and probably before that. So we just put them right under the table. Or hopefully somebody with a limited budget or will be able to just take that home for free and still read it and keep it out of a landfill. Yeah. So yes, I mean, there's no bad book.
Right.
But we just don't have room for them all.
Yeah. Barry?
Yeah, one other thing I kind of forgot to mention. So we're part of the Winding Rivers Library System here in La Crosse. So that's a 5-county system. It's like 32 libraries. We share a catalog. So that's also part of that. Like, you know, just a great example is those Dick Francis titles. So we look, is this book available elsewhere? Can somebody request it from another library and have it brought here? We do that too. That's the way, not every library, especially like smaller libraries, you know, around the 5 counties, they can't have everything on their shelves either. So maybe they're, what they have in stock is leaning more towards, you know, like the Dick Francis or paperbacks or something like that. And maybe for some of these other titles, which maybe they wouldn't have a huge demand for in their community, people can still get it, have it brought to their community, read it and return it. So that's always kind of a factor too. We try to think not just about La Crosse, but about kind of the broader library system.
Okay. So if something is maybe it's on your borderline, but there are maybe 2 other available copies in those 5 count in the Winding Rivers Library System, maybe that helps your decision-making process go a little bit more smoothly.
Yeah, absolutely. And because we try to encourage that, you know, anybody can request a book or other material from any library in the system, get it sent to the one they want, read it or view it, return it, and get sent back. So it's really not like you have one library. It's like you got 30 libraries.
Well, and we'll talk about a lot of the different ways that you can access materials through the library later in the show, apps and all kinds of interesting things. Beth, I know there are major online retailers that have over the years cut a chunk into independent bookstore sales, but there are other options available for people to support independent bookstores too. But I'm wondering about Barry's talk about like interlibrary loan reminded me of a question I wanted to ask you. When somebody comes in and is looking for a title, like is there a way that you can just like go to some sort of wholesale repository and like order it for them, or do you have to just like cross your fingers and hope it comes in one day?
No, we absolutely can order a new or used copy for our customers and are pretty capable of finding books. So we never use the Big A. That's a personal choice of mine. So I use a different platform where I'm able to find books and get them to our customers. So we're good. You know, we always encourage the library too. The library and other books and brick and mortar stores and are all part of the book ecosystem, but we're happy to help find that book. Even some really hard to find ones we can usually find.
Well, I am interested to learn about what's on your reading list this year, and we're going to do that in just a moment. You're listening to Newsmakers. We're talking about books today, and with Beth Hartung from Pearl Street Books in La Crosse and Barry McKnight from the La Crosse Public Library, and our conversation will continue in just a moment. If you'd like to check out a previous episode of our show, or maybe you missed part of this conversation and would like to catch it again, you can find us online at wpr.org/newsmakers. That's wpr.org/newsmakers. Our program continues in just a moment. It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall. We're talking with Barry McKnight and Beth Hartung, and we're talking about what we're reading in 2023. And in particular, I have a notebook and a pen here, and I haven't made a list for 2023 yet, so I'm going to pick the brains of the experts. You can each give as many titles as you'd like, but just for starters, Beth, what's on your list this year?
Oh, my next book that I'm going to read is called Earthlings by Sayaka Murata. She's a Japanese author who's, we sell a lot of works in translation at our store, and I've been just really impressed with her. I lived in Japan for 10 years, so I love Japanese fiction. And I'm really excited about this next book. I've got two of her books on my to-be-read pile. And then for the store, do you want me to go into the store books right now that I'm really excited about for January?
Ahead.
Okay. So I just recently... I'm starting to order for Black History Month. And so I'm really excited about BIPOC authors. We try really hard to have a wide selection of windows and mirrors in our store. By that, I mean that you're going to be able to pick up a book and either it'll be a mirror of your life and just kind of an affirming, really wonderful book to read, or it's going to be a window, a chance for you to get a look into somebody else's life or experience or something you don't know about. And so there's some great books coming up. One of them that I'm super excited about, it's a debut novel by Eleanor Shear. It's called River Sing Me Home. And it's coming out on the 31st of January. And it's a mother's journey in the aftermath of post-slavery through the Caribbean to find her stolen children. And it's supposed to be very touching and inspiring. And I'm really excited about it. I love reading debut novels. I think it's just really fun to support these authors and hopefully help push them out so that they can, you know, become sustainable authors. So that's one of them that I'm excited about. It'll be in our store on the 31st. And then there's one other one it's a children's book that I'm just so, so excited about. It's by Glenda Armin, and it's called The Ice Cream Man. And I had no idea who invented the ice cream that we currently eat today. And I, through researching to try to find children's books for Black History Month, I found out that August Jackson did. And he was the cook for four presidents, and he developed the recipe for the ice cream that we eat today. And it's coming out as a children's book actually it came out today. We don't have it in our store yet, but we'll have it in our store next week.
That is amazing. That's really an interesting selection. And you brought up the point about and a lot of people think about it as Black History Month approaches, but perhaps, well, not even perhaps, we should be thinking about it all year long, but mm-hmm. intentionally including BIPOC authors in what you want to read. For a lot of people, we talked about the escapism. We talked about people wanting whatever is familiar and makes them comfortable and wanting to sort of get mm-hmm. away from the issues of the world. Beth, how can people balance like what they need reading to be for them while also looking for opportunities to experience something new and to be intentional about those new things that they're experiencing?
Yeah. I mean, personally, I will read some challenging books and then I'll read a fun book, one that's just going to not make me put too much emotional labor into it. And so it's really about shifting them. And like Barry said earlier, I often have two or three, four books going at a time. And I just finished, kind of embarrassed to say, but I just finished The Underground Railroad by Whitehead last night. And that was a hard read for me. I could only read a little bit of it every day because it had a lot of emotional labor for me to read, but it was an important book for me to read. And so side by side, I was reading a book, Late Migrations, a memoir about a history of love and loss. And that one was easier for me to read, and it was essays I could set down. So I encourage people to give themselves permission to pause a book if they need to, but also to push themselves to read some things that are a little bit outside of their normal range.
Okay. Barry, I'm interested in learning what's on your list as 2023 gets kicked off.
Sure. Well, you know, one of the things, we'll talk about it later, that the library has been doing every year these past few years is leading kind of a regional read. about maybe some larger topics in our community. So a couple of years ago, we had done, this was back in 2021, we did Waking Up White by Debbie Irving. And that was part, we worked with the Waking Up White Collaborative to do a bunch programs and book chats and things like that. Last year was about climate change. This year going forward, we're still kind of in the planning stages, but we've been looking at some titles. And we're thinking about maybe having a regional read about mental health, so it could have a number of community conversations related to that. So there's one that's it's coming out at the end of March that we're looking at called How Not to Kill Yourself: A Portrait of the Suicidal Mind.
Oh, wow.
by Clancy Martin. We're looking at that one as that's sort of a darkly humorous at times, but kind of deep look at, you know, why that people might have that thought, those intrusive thoughts about death. Another one that we are looking at that came out a couple of years ago, but I feel like might be a perfect one for our community is a book called Maybe You Should Talk to Someone, Her Therapist, and Our Lives Revealed. You know, I think especially since COVID, the general conversations have been more open about mental health, kind of instead of it being quite so, you know, of a taboo topic. I think a lot more people are talking about it in big and small ways. And certainly, you know, there's all kinds of ways to look at that, whether on an individual basis or how it might impact our communities. So those are two of the ones we're really kind of thinking about. I'm going to be reading both of those here in the next few weeks and seeing if they're viable ones for a larger community read.
Interesting. And when that is, I'm asking you on the front end, when we get closer to that community read being launched, that certainly sounds like an interesting thing to talk about on Newsmakers, just
I'd love to.
So that'd be
fun. Absolutely.
What about other notable offerings coming around this year? What are you looking at that might be on other people's reading lists for 2023?
Well, you know, going along with what Beth had just mentioned, Colson Whitehead has another book that's coming out also in March, the sequel to Harlem Shuffle called Crook Manifesto. He's been a very popular author. This one is kind of about Harlem and New York in the 1970s and just some, you know, micro and macro issues and interpersonal relationships and larger community problems and that kind of thing. So that one is, I know a lot of people have been talking about it around here.
You talked earlier about embracing some of those genre books from your childhood and everything and watching the ways those genres develop in this area where authors and publishers and others are trying to seek more ways to include different perspectives. And with this heightened awareness that we have now about representation and how much it matters and making sure that not everybody who appears in a book is the same and making sure that not every author of the book is the same. I'm wondering how in a genre book, like in something like science fiction, where there is so much going on there that can't even be assumed to be human how does that effort for inclusion and representation manifest itself in books like that?
I would say, you know, one of the things that I found is that actually, you know, speculative fiction, so sci-fi and fantasy, are often really, it seems like they're often ahead of the game in terms of, you know, how to sort of approach telling a story in an inclusive way, you know, and in a way that's done that's very natural. You know, I think even if you're talking about a fantasy where maybe there's, you know, different kind of, you know, fantasy races and things like that, there's that's often kind of, it can be brought in. I'm just thinking of a couple books right now. Like one of my favorite books that I read this last year was The Black Tongue Thief by Christopher Buhlmann. And you know, it had some you know, it had kind of non-binary characters and things like that, that it was just done in such a natural way that you didn't even sort of realize it, the use of respecting use of pronouns, or just trying to bring in different perspectives. That another great one, and this is a little bit of an indie one that I've been I'm currently reading. It's called The Dust of Rill, R-H-L-L, by J.F. Meskimen. And it's sort of a dark fantasy, sword and sorcery kind of thing. But, you know, it's you know, dealing with, there's the repercussions of drug use and, you know, economic divide and racial divides and also, you know, non-binary, having some characters who are non-binary in there, but just being a part of the, not being held up as like some sort of, you know, I'm doing this as like virtue signaling, just as like a believable, relatable character. So it becomes so natural that you're not even really, you know, if you were someone who had trouble with that, you're not going to have trouble with it, or you'll be halfway through the book and loving it, and then you realize, oh, wait a minute, I guess I was supposed to be mad about that, I guess. But
there's so many there's so many people who write, and having been in the profession that I've been in for 25 years, and getting sent just, I mean, so many books over the years, from, you know, everything from self-published stuff, mm-hmm. to stuff from big publishers, to stuff from regional, local publishers, you know, in the different places that I've worked. You can't possibly read everything. How do you decide what makes the cut? Either Barry, for the library's collection, or Beth, we'll start with you. What makes the cut for a bookstore with you know, I mean, you've got a big store, but the space is finite.
Right, right. And the budget is finite. It's really our customers. You know, we usually only will buy two copies of something at a time, unless we're really confident that it's going to be a hit locally. And it's about, you know, whether it will go off the shelf, but then I really listen to our customers. So the beauty about, if a customer comes in and wants to buy a book that we don't have, we will order it, and usually will come in within a week, but I'll do a little bit of research, especially if I've had two customers ask for that same title. That's really going to help me figure out what to put on the shelf. And then talking with other independent bookstores in the Midwest, relying on them for some help too, of to figuring out what is relevant, what is hot. And then sometimes it's just gut, and once in a while I'm wrong.
We all have our own experiences and our own biases, mm-hmm. our own political or religious or whatever other thoughts, our own family mm-hmm. experiences. How do you make sure that there's something for everybody?
There probably isn't in my store, to be honest.
Okay.
Not everybody. And that is tough, but you do want that windows and mirrors for everybody. And mm-hmm. I will go with more of the BIPOC authors, the debut novelists, writers for the new books, because I want to help support them. And then I'm really out book hunting, trying and casting my net far and wide to try to get those used books in that are going to meet more of anybody and everybody that's going to walk in the door, because then I don't have as much of an investment in it. So if it doesn't ever sell, it's not such a great loss as buying a $28 hardcover new book that, you know, maybe would never sell. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Try to pick and choose like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But really listening to customers.
Barry, what about you? Beth is talking about an environment where her customers can order things. And, you know, as a private business, you know, she doesn't have the same sort of public obligation that you do. How does the library make sure that there's something in the collection that's reflective of you know, the diversity of views in our community?
Sure. Well, there's a couple ways, I'd say. One, you know, there's certainly there's a large number of kind of professional journals that have book reviews, so we're not ordering things sort of blind. They're, you know, they get reviewed, they get sort of discussed about, you know, what kind of audience they may have. And, you know, it is a balance, because being the largest library in our library system, you know, for example, when James Patterson has a new book come out, seemingly every week, but when there's a new book comes out, you know, we get a large number of copies because the demand for it is going to be, that initial demand is going to be, you know, insane. But that demand is going to drop off. And by the end of that year, we may have gone from, you know, having 20 copies of that book to two, because, like, you know, now all the people who wanted it have checked it out. And this will just kind of, you know, have to balance for that idea about space. But, you know, yeah. The thing too is, I guess, is always trying to be, you know, libraries occupy this place where we really are trying to be that third place for everyone. And that includes our collection. So as long as something doesn't have, say, like hate speech or something like that, you know, we're not going to buy everything that's out there. But if things get requested, and we do take requests, we get requests all the time, mm-hmm. and we look at it. So we look at, is this like somebody's cousin's self-published book that's, you know, problematic, or is this just like a book that hasn't popped up on our radar yet? And, you know, we try to do it in an unbiased way, but also that means kind of you have to give space for some of those voices that might not have been traditionally accessible in a library. So you want to have an eye towards exposing people to new voices, wherever that may be, say a nonfiction title on wherever that may be on kind of the social or political spectrum. But, you know, you also want to have those things where people are going to come in just that sort of comfort food aspect. So it's a balancing act, and we try to get as much feedback as possible. There's a form on our website. You can request titles. We'll look at it and see, well, sometimes people don't check the broader catalog. So, well, here's a, you know, they requested a book that they wanted us to purchase, but there's five others, you know, around the system. We're probably not going to get a copy of that. We'll instead get it transferred for them and be like, here. So yeah, it's really kind of a continual process, because we do take that twin responsibility of really being an unbiased, but yet still giving, having it, since it's a public square, having all kinds of voices on there. And that means also voices that had been traditionally excluded.
Yeah. Yeah. We're talking to Barry McKnight, whom you've just heard. He's from the La Crosse Public Library. Beth Hartung is also with us from Pearl Street Books in La Crosse. And of course, this is Newsmakers, and our conversation will continue in just a moment. If you'd like to get in touch with the show, you can do so by sending me an email, newsmakers@wpr.org, newsmakers@wpr.org. Let me know what you're reading this year. Let me know if there's an author you'd like to hear on the program or a topic that you'd like us to discuss. It's newsmakers@wpr.org. Our program continues in just a moment here on Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm talking to Barry McKnight and Beth Hartung. Of course, I'm Ezra Wall. You can get in touch with our program, as I mentioned before the break, newsmakers@wpr.org, or you can find our archive online, wpr.org/newsmakers. We've been talking about what's on your reading lists this year in 2023. As the year gets kicked off, we've heard a little bit about what's going on, what's offered at the library, at Pearl Street Books. And I want to put you on the spot a little bit. We didn't talk about this ahead of time, but one of the things that is on my list is I'm still, you know, I put stuff in my stack of books to read, and it takes me just years to get through it. And one thing that I want to do better this year is to be more aware of who is telling stories in Wisconsin, and particularly in southwestern Wisconsin. So I'm looking for tips on that. Barry, Beth, I don't know who wants to go first with this, but if somebody, it doesn't have to be a new book, it can be an old book, it can be one that's coming out this year or one that came out 10 years ago. If somebody says, I want to read more Wisconsin authors, and particularly more southwestern Wisconsin authors, where are we looking, Beth?
Oh, Maggie Ginsberg, Still True. Everyone must read that book. It's a wonderful, wonderful novel. It's her debut novel. Came out last year. It's a book that just begs to be discussed with people. So I highly recommend it. She's from the Blue Mountain area. So it's the setting of the novel takes place in the Driftless region.
Okay.
Love her book.
Good. Wonderful. Barry, what comes to the top of your mind?
Well, the one that just popped up maybe most recently, and Beth, I think that he's maybe also had an author event at your bookstore, but we had here for one of our author talks was John Armbruster, who wrote Tailspin.
I'm reading that right now.
Okay.
I'm literally reading that. He was on our show, like, this is how slow I am. He was on our show like a little over a year ago, and I finally am reading the book. Like, I started it last week.
That happens.
Yeah.
That happens. But, you know, I guess I feel like there's been a lot of regional buzz building about that book. You know, it was a very big event here. I know he's been at a lot of libraries kind of around the southwestern Wisconsin talking about his work. So that's sort of a story. You'd maybe able to talk about it even more so, I guess, reading it. But kind of talking about a World War II veteran and sort of the trauma he had experienced, and it's paralleled by the author's experience kind of dealing with some family issues and illness in his family.
Yeah, he takes sort of a Tuesdays with Maury approach to interviewing mm-hmm. his subject over the course of time. So in the book, he's telling not only the story of Jean Moran, who's this former Army Air Corps pilot from Soldiers Grove, Wisconsin. He's also simultaneously in talking about his actual meetings with Moran. He's also recounting his wife's health battles and the trauma that their family is facing as well. Really interesting book. I'm only like 110 pages into it, so don't spoil it.
One other one I kind of would like to mention, and these are from the last few years ago, but there's a local author, Bo Song, who she has her own publishing house called Moth House Press. She's written a few books. She sort of writes folklore and kind of horror, but inspired by, at least in part, by kind of the folklore of her heritage. In this case, she's of Asian American. She's Hmong as well. So kind of even like she's got a series of novellas about a kind of a family of killers called the Butchers. But it's inspired kind of by some tales from her childhood. She's got another book called Folklore, kind of the same thing. But she's one that's been getting kind of a lot of attention, and they're available here at the library. So
interesting. Cool. Now I have a list to go from. So good work. Mission accomplished.
We have so much talent in Wisconsin. Yeah. Lots of great books.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I want to talk to Barry. I want you to tell me about all the different ways people can access content through the library these days, because it's just astounding. I mentioned to you that I haven't actually been in the library in a few months because I get everything on the app and the other app. So tell me,
sure.
It's more than just go to the library and see what book is on the shelf, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, first, like I'd mentioned before, if it's not on there, you know, there's a fair number of folks who come in, they just sort of shelf read, look for something. But if you're looking for something specific, we do have this broad catalog that's shared with these 32 other libraries in our region. After that, like you mentioned, there's what's called the Wisconsin Library Consortium, where libraries in Wisconsin sort of buy into this ebook library or e and audiobook library. They can do this through a free app called Libby. And you can request titles. There's a certain number of, just like in a regular library, there's a certain number of copies available in the state. So if it's something that's extremely popular, sometimes the wait list is a little long for that, but that's really used by almost every library in the state for people to access ebook titles. But there's another service we have called Hoopla, and these are accessible through, you can find them through the library's website. And Hoopla, the difference between Hoopla and Hoopla has, you know, graphic novels, it has ebooks, it has audiobooks and some movies, is you have a certain number of checkouts allowed per month, per user. So it doesn't matter how many people are reading the same book, you can read that book, but you can only read X number of books in that particular month. Those are both used quite a bit by folks. So those are two of them. And then I guess lastly would be, so while we have this catalog, we share 32 libraries, we can get titles from outside our library system through what's called interlibrary loan. So we can get them from, you know, largely Wisconsin, but also Minnesota and sometimes Illinois. Often these are from university collections or something like that. These could be, you know, fiction titles that maybe are out of print or just not widely available anymore, more obscure titles, but something that might have been appearing, you know, in a larger university library or something along those lines. So there's a lot of different ways to access materials, however you want to do it, whether it's physical, whether it's an ebook, audiobooks. Audiobooks are extremely popular. And the ones you access through Libby, of course, are just electronically. So it's a download to your phone, your device, or you can just listen online. And we, of course, have books on CD. But another thing we've just started getting based off of demand, you know, not many people have CD players anymore.
I have one CD player in my entire life, and it is in my 12-year-old car.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I had to buy a DVD player so I could play CDs in my house, you know, like it was, there's not that common anymore, but there's still a high demand for them. Well, now similar to what kids can check out, it's basically an MP3 player that book, the entirety of that book is put on. It's called Play Away. So you can get this title and you're kind of carrying around this little tiny device that you're plugged your headphones into. And that's it. So people, you know, there's a lot of different ways for people to access it, especially given the range of technology people have, right? So the stuff you can access through your tablet, your smartphone, your home computer, your car CD player, your pocket, whatever you want to have.
Nice. So Beth, I'm trying to think of a corresponding question, because I know Pearl Street Books, it's not about the app or the download or anything like that. But whereas a lot of people might think of an independent bookstore downtown as like, well, I'll go there and look, and they either have it or they don't. There are a lot of different ways that you try to serve your customers and different avenues of getting what they're looking for.
That's correct. We can order books typically, and the book will arrive within 5 to 10 days, closer to 5 usually. We can also mail them directly to someone's home. You can buy a gift and we can send it to whoever it's to, have it mailed directly to them. We can also, like if you're from La Crosse, but you've moved away and still want to support your local independent bookstore, we're happy to mail it to you wherever you live. So we'll go above it. We even deliver to people's doors. So if they're not able to get out and about or not wanting to get out in the winter, we're able to send deliver books right to the door if you live in La Crosse.
Now, you've been affiliated with the store for a little while. It became yours in the year. Tell us a bit of the story of Pearl Street Books, because it's an amazing little shop.
It is. It's been around for over 20 years. It used to be a shoe store. And as you said, when we first met up today, that it was built for it to be a bookstore. It's just beautiful building, historical building in downtown on Pearl Street between Kroner's Hardware and Jules Coffee Shop. We're predominantly a used book store, but we have quite a few. We have more new books now in the store than what we've maybe ever had. And it's a beautiful space. We have a space for people to be able to sit and read now. And we can order whatever it is that you want to read. We'll help you find the book. Sometimes people come in, they're with somebody who's a reader, and they tell me they're not a reader. And I like to tell them that they just haven't found the right book yet.
Somebody tells an independent bookstore owner that they're not a reader. That sounds like a personal challenge to you, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think most of us, maybe we stopped reading in school because we were always assigned books that we weren't really interested in. My son's partner told me she didn't think she was really a reader. And then she realized that she likes nonfiction. She had been trying to read fiction and she doesn't like fiction, and that's just fine. I gave myself permission about 5 years ago to stop a book that I wasn't enjoying.
Mm-hmm.
That was the best gift I've ever given myself.
That's great.
I used to think if I opened it, I had to finish it. You don't need to.
Yeah, I was asking my mother, who came home from the library with an armful of books one day this week, and I said, why did you get so many books? You're only going to read one of them, and then you're going to take them back. And she said, yeah, but I don't know which one of these is going to be good. So yeah, I mean, it's like you start one, it's not your bag, you know, don't waste time on it. Go to the next thing.
Absolutely.
Do you remember what this might be like an even early childhood memory, like, but do you remember the first book that you, what's the first book that kind of stuck in your memory?
Well, I'm sure there's plenty before that, but one of the things that I remember from my childhood, especially like, so when I went to grade school, had a lot of Ripley's Believe It or Not books.
Yeah. Okay.
And this was like it was like 50 of them in the elementary school library. Uh-huh. And it was that kind of thing of like weird little stories, strange facts. I just devoured those things as a kid. So it became like this, I don't know, it just gave me this sort of broad interests. And as an adult, I really leaned into it, and I'm just going to, you know, learn whatever I want to and kind of go down whatever weird little alleys of interest my mind will take me.
Well, from Believe It or Not, as a kid, as a teenager, whatever, it's no wonder you talked about having taught history before. I mean, that's, you know, sort of a pop culture version of what you study when you study history.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good point.
Beth, what about you? What's the first book that you can remember sticking in your mind?
So the first book that changed my life is when I was in kindergarten, I was extremely shy and introverted, and I cried every day in kindergarten until my sister told my kindergarten teacher, and it was a K-12 building. So my older siblings were all in the same building, and they'd take turns walking me into the classroom, trying to convince me to stay there. And my sister told my kindergarten teacher that I could read. And I don't think I could really read, but I had memorized a Dick and Jean book. And the teacher told me to bring it in the next day and read it to the class. And I did. I still have vivid memories sitting on her lap and reading this Go Dog Go book type book to my classmates. And it made me comfortable in the classroom. It changed my life that morning. And that's the power of books.
Yeah, yeah. The first stories I ever got immersed in were the Hardy Boys and Encyclopedia Brown. I don't remember which ones came first, but the first book, just your story about having memorized the book reminded me, because my dad would come home from work and lay down on the couch and sit me up on his belly and read books to me every day after work. And the first book that I loved. Was Mr. McMillican's Mountain. And I memorized that book, and he would try to skip stuff, and I would catch him. You skipped a word. Dad, you skipped a word. Go back. Start over.
Ezra, that what you're describing, though, is the power of books and the community read that Barry talked about earlier on in the show, that it's a shared experience of books. Yeah. Books are just, it's amazing how many people come into the store and they see that cover of the Hardy Boys or a Newbery book. They remember that cover, and it just takes them right back to whenever it was that they read it. It's really, really powerful and beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a wonderful thing. And I'm glad we've been able to spend this hour talking about it on Newsmakers today. Beth Hartung from Pearl Street Books, thank you very much for not only a list of great books, but for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
Barry McKnight from the La Crosse Public Library, thank you also for your input into our conversation and for sharing your time.
Yeah, always a pleasure.
And
thank you very much.
We'll talk to you again when that community read gets off the ground.
Thanks. Great.
Happy reading, everyone.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Kate Spranger produced today's show. Thanks a lot, Kate. If you would like to listen to our show every week, we're on 10 a.m. on the Ideas Network 90.3 in La Crosse and 7 p.m. on Fridays on NPR News and Music 88.9. Otherwise, of course, you can always catch our archive online, wpr.org/newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall. Please join us again next time for another Newsmakers right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.